Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Amazon's One Medical purchase won't be blocked by the FTC. Plus, why layoff announcements don't always match up with actual job reductions. And the office real estate industry faces a day of reckoning.
You have thousands and thousands of office buildings worth less than the amount of the debt. And now landlords and banks and lenders have to reconcile themselves with that.
It's Wednesday, February 22nd. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal. And here's the AM edition of What's News. The top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Amazon's purchase of One Medical health clinics will not be blocked by the U.S. Federal Trade Commission. That is according to an agency spokesman who said that while an FTC investigation of the $3.9 billion deal continues, it won't sue in time to block the merger. Journal reporter Julie Steinberg has more.
Under this deal, Amazon would be able to substantially expand its healthcare offerings and operate physical medical clinics. It would expand its business to sell healthcare services to employers, which cover some of the cost of workers' health insurance as a benefit, and face ongoing pressure to control that spending. And under federal law, the FTC can sue to block mergers that would substantially reduce competition or lead to a monopoly. And they're also continuing to look at whether Amazon would use data about One Medical's clients for any purposes other than what the patients permitted when they signed up with the healthcare service. So yes, antitrust enforcers are still investigating, but it looks like they're not going to sue in time to stop the deal from closing.
Consulting firm McKinsey plans to eliminate up to 2,000 jobs, adding to a wave of companies that are cutting corporate positions. It would be one of McKinsey's biggest headcount reductions to date, according to a person familiar with the matter. That source said the restructuring plan is expected to be completed in the coming months, when McKinsey will make a decision on the extent of the cuts to its 45,000-person staff. A jury in the United States has convicted Mexico's former top law enforcement officer of drug trafficking. Genaro Garcia Luna, who was a close Washington ally in the war on drugs, was found guilty of helping the Sinaloa cartel smuggle more than 50 tons of cocaine into the U.S. Garcia Luna is the most senior former Mexican official to be convicted in the U.S. on drug charges and is scheduled to be sentenced on June 27th, facing up to life in prison. His lawyer said the defense was disappointed with the verdict and that his client will do everything he can to clear his name. Rio Tinto, the world's second biggest mining company by market value, has reported a 41% fall in net profit for 2022 and cut its payout to shareholders. While profits at the company still totaled more than $12.4 billion last year, Wall Street Journal reporter Rhiannon Hoyle in Adelaide, Australia, says that Rio Tinto's fortunes are tied to volatile iron ore prices.
In 2021, prices for iron ore surged to a record high. But last year, on concerns about the global economy and China, particularly China's property market, iron ore prices tumbled to a three-year low. And that's really eaten into the company's underlying earnings. Rio Tinto was also paid less for its copper, which is another one of its main commodities, and grappled with cost inflation issues. The fall in earnings at Rio Tinto echoed the declines reported by BHP, the world's biggest miner, a day earlier, and it also generates a lot of its earnings from iron ore and copper. So it similarly felt a bite from the falls in those commodity prices from record levels.
Microsoft has signed pacts to give Nintendo and Nvidia access to its Call of Duty video games for a decade, if its $75 billion deal to buy Activision Blizzard gets approved. The pacts are part of the software maker's efforts to relieve regulator concerns about the transaction. Nintendo confirmed the agreement and declined further comment. Microsoft Vice Chairman and President Brad Smith said the company also signed a 10-year partnership with NVIDIA to put its games on the chipmaker's cloud streaming service. Microsoft made a similar pledge last year to Sony, one of the loudest critics of the planned Activision deal, but the companies haven't reached a formal agreement. Sony didn't respond to a request for comment. And on tap for today, the aforementioned NVIDIA is set to report earnings, along with eBay and off-price retailer TJX. Meanwhile, the Federal Reserve is set to release minutes from its January 31st to February 1st meeting when it raised interest rates by 0.25%. And President Biden is due to meet the leaders of NATO's eastern flank, known as the Bucharest Nine. Big job cuts can make headlines and move stock prices, but one thing they don't always do is actually leave companies all that much smaller. Wall Street Journal business reporter Teo Francis has been digging into this disconnect between layoff announcements and actual headcount numbers, and he's here now to share what he has been finding out. Teo, thanks so much for being with us.
Great to be here.
So, Teo, why is it that companies don't always end up as small as their layoff announcements suggest they might?
Well, of course, we don't know where this year's round of layoffs are going to end up. But we know from looking at past years that companies might say they're laying off 8, 10, 12% of their workforce, and they end the year maybe a few percent smaller. In a few cases, they end up larger or they end up considerably smaller. But in all, you don't tend to see companies shrink by quite as much as they announce when it comes to layoffs.
And why is that?
Well, there are a bunch of reasons. One of them is that a company might be laying off people in one division or several divisions while hiring in others. They might simply be refocusing on more profitable business lines. In other cases, new business crops up. I talked to one company, State Street, and basically said there are situations where we end up with new big accounts, and so we hire for those because that's more business, that's more revenue, you need more people to service those accounts. There's other cases where companies may simply not lay off as many people or may lay them off and then hire later in the year as things change or new initiatives are launched.
Teo, is what's happening here that businesses are making more headline-grabbing announcements about layoffs than they are about hiring?
I will say that layoff announcements seem to be a bigger focus for companies than hiring announcements. You do occasionally see companies like Amazon will say, oh, we're hiring, you know, so many thousand people this year. But at a time like this, especially when a lot of companies, a lot of people, a lot of economists are worried about where the economy is going, you tend to see the opposite. Companies are highlighting their layoffs, they're highlighting their efficiency. And so I think a lot of companies want to signal to the market that they are doing everything they can to acknowledge this economic reality, to be ready for it. And so they're highlighting the layoffs. That doesn't mean that's all they're doing. They could be hiring at the same time.
That was Wall Street Journal business reporter Teo Francis. Teo, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, what does the rising number of office landlord defaults mean for lenders and for the commercial real estate industry? We'll take a look after the break.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The number of big office landlords defaulting on their loans is on the rise. Fresh evidence that more developers believe remote and hybrid work habits may have permanently impaired the office market. So just how bad is the outlook for that industry and how is it responding? Here with some answers is Wall Street Journal commercial real estate reporter Peter Grant. Hey, Peter.
Hi.
What are you seeing with respect to office loan delinquencies in particular? Who is being affected here?
We're seeing the whole industry being affected by what's really a moment of reckoning that has been building for a number of years. What's happening now is some of the big name landlords are beginning to either default on their loans or acknowledge that they're going through restructurings. Big names like Brookfield Asset Management just a few weeks ago registered with the SEC that they've defaulted on a few loans. You have companies like Related Management and RXR, who are in workout discussions with their lenders that could easily end in the landlords turning the buildings over to the creditors. And you're also having a number of new problems surface every week. There's a firm called TREP, and they're a data firm that tracks this market very closely. They say 5 to 10 problems per month are beginning to surface, and it's only going to increase.
Putting all this together, does this signal this industry is truly in trouble, or are we in recession territory here?
Well, according to people in the industry, we are. Owen Thomas, who's the CEO of Boston Properties, said that on a recent earnings call. He said the commercial property industry is in a recession, and this has been building throughout the pandemic, ever since workers had this exodus from the office and now have had a very weak return. People have been looking for stress in the commercial property industry, especially with office buildings, and now that's starting to happen.
You said a weak return to the office. Is it continuing? Are we sort of now not seeing a return anymore? Where do we stand?
We have hit a plateau. At least during the early part of the pandemic, landlords were hoping that there would be a big surge of workers coming back. It's been more like a trickle. And now that trickle has plateaued off at about 50%. So we're at a level at which about half the workers that had been using office buildings pre-pandemic are now returning to them. And so that's not good for the landlord. If a tenant shrinks from 150,000 square feet to 100,000 square feet, that's 50,000 more square feet that the landlords have to lease. That's happening all over the place.
Peter, what's the next move for office building owners and investors?
Well, I think a day of reckoning is a pretty good way of describing what's going to happen. You have buildings that are underwater, thousands and thousands of office buildings that are worth less than the amount of the debt. And now landlords and banks and lenders have to reconcile themselves with that. And that's a problem not only for them, but it's a problem throughout the financial system because there are trillions of dollars of debt backing up office buildings. So problems for landlords, foreclosures, defaults, that's going to trickle through and ripple through the financial system, causing problems for banks. And once you start having problems for banks, it starts affecting the whole economy.
Is this a foreclosure contagion risk, or there's some things to perhaps hold us short of that?
Well, there are a few positive things that landlords are clinging on to. One is that there still is some leasing, especially for the highest quality buildings. From landlords' perspective, they are able to limit the damage because they structure every individual building as a separate asset so that when banks foreclose, they can only go after that one building. But we're talking about billions and billions of dollars worth of losses here, and it doesn't seem like that's going to change for quite some time. And it's just going to be putting more pressure on the economy, which is looking kind of shaky to begin with.
That was Wall Street Journal commercial real estate reporter Peter Grant. Peter, thank you for the update.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And finally, not even pets are immune from inflation-driven cutbacks. With the cost of pet food, pet products, and even pets themselves all up more than 10% year over year, according to the January Consumer Price Index, pet owners are making changes to their spending habits. And Wall Street Journal reporter Rachel Wolf says those cutbacks are not only weighing on doting pet owners, but could also drag companies who were counting on ever higher spending on the family cats and dogs.
One pet owner told me, you know, it's not like the dogs can go out and get jobs and buy the food themselves. So pet owners feel really bad when they need to switch to a less expensive brand of food, especially. There's some evidence that the food, just like the food that people eat, impacts our health. The same is true for our pets. So people are having to trade down there. People are buying fewer toys and treats, pet beds, dog houses, cat trees. All those hard goods have seen sales decline about 20%. People are also cutting back on some other of the more ridiculous perks, like the dog spas, questioning whether their dog really needs to go to a professional groomer or if they can do a good enough job at home.
And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.